That's it.
Morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting will now come to order. Anyone has any cell phones or any other audible devices, if you'd silence them now, is not to disrupt the rest of the meeting. We'd appreciate it. And if you'd stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. All right, moving along to item number three, this is discussion and possible action, approval of the agenda for this date, June the 5th, 2018. Mr. Witten, do we have any changes to make to today's agenda?
No changes, Mr. Chairman.
None? Is there any public comment regarding today's agenda? Hearing none, if I get a motion to approve today's agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve today's agenda for June 5th, 2018.
For a second.
Moved and second to approve today's agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number four. This is our consent agenda for today. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Hearing none, if I get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve today's consent agenda.
I'll second.
Moved and second to approve today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right, moving along now to item number five, discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. We'll start over here on the right side of the room with Chief Deputy Tony Dosen in the Sheriff's Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. For the record, Tony Dosen. Sheriff just wanted me to pass along that yesterday he did a ride-along with State Senator Don Gustafson. They toured the Lockwood area and TRI and did a walkthrough of Tesla. And after the tour, the senator was very impressed overall with the goings-on of the north part of the county.
Very good. Thanks. I don't think he was proponent of the tax abatement.
I'll speak to that during the article.
Okay. All right, next up, Director of IT, James Dean.
Good morning, Commissioners. James Dean, Story County IT. Just wanted to report that we are more than halfway completed with cutting over the entire county to the Active Directory domain. The recorder's office is now live on the Tyler Recorder project. I think we're the first county in Nevada to be live on that, so making very quick progress. We've had no technical issues as far as our hardware or software implementation goes, so things are moving along real smooth. About 50-60% complete on the cutover. Fire and Sheriff are our last projects and our largest projects, obviously, so we'll probably do Fire next and then Sheriff, and we expect to be ready for the next Tyler and DevNet deployment.
Very good.
All right.
Very
That's
good.
All I have.
Any questions for James?
No.
Great.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Very good. All right. Project coordinator for all things under flood damage and repair work. And that, Mike Northam.
Morning, Commissioners. Mike Northam for the record. Just got a very quick update for you guys. The Lockwood Senior Center is complete. Personnel down there are very happy with the results of it. They're back in business. No further disruptions down there. Work in the chambers is still ongoing. We expect to have that complete this week. They're working on the crown molding in this eastern room over here, and that's a bit more time consuming than the ceilings. You can kind of look through the transom and see this one completed here. Following that, of course, is going to be paint and wallpaper. We'll try to move through that as quickly as possible. We have run into some issues with scheduling around courtroom activities, so I'm trying to get in the middle of that and be a little proactive and get them in here on off hours and weekends if they're available to work. And we can make a lot of noise and dust and not disrupt courtroom activities. At the DA's office, painting was completed in there. The only thing remaining on that is the professional carpet cleaning. I did talk to the general contractor. He's going to look and see if there's any room in that budget to get that carpet stretched, because you've got some issues in there with that carpet getting bunched up and that kind of thing. So we'll see what we can do with that. And possibly the same thing in the clerk's office, if we can pull it off and get that sort of straightened out. Let's see. On the tower project out on USA Parkway, MDOT has ordered their materials for the towers, the concrete, the little sheds for the generators and all that stuff, and that's going to get delivered at the end of June. They'll be staging materials in the vicinity there. We, of course, are responsible for cutting the road from the gate up to the tower site, and I'm actively working on trying to get that to happen by end of month. We do have some interest with some companies that want to come in and do a secondary tower, which would end up with the county at a net zero cost for implementing that road up in there. Part of what's going to happen with that now that we're in fire season is you can't operate a dozer out there without fire protection, so we're trying to get a whole bunch of stuff coordinated at once to get that to happen, so I'll keep you guys advised as we proceed on that. Justice Center, I'm still working with Pete Dubé on that. He's in the middle of his site plan revising, and so I don't have much to report on that, but hopefully here soon. Really good news was the fire station 71 here on C Street. Roof was completed by Perez Roofing. They did a fantastic job. These guys had a great attention to detail, great attention to safety. It was nice every time I showed up on site. Everyone had their helmets, eye protection, fall protection. Knocked that project out, did a great job, installed numerous extra vents. It was inadequately vented. We got a new drip edge. We got walk pads. And I was able to pull the little weather vane that was up there. That was built by Jack Greenhall, who's my landlord. So he was unhappy that it had gotten rusty and damaged. So I have had him remove that, and I turned it over to him. So he's renovating that. We'll put it back up when we get that back. As far as the courthouse roof, we got the south section and the east section completed. We were looking at maybe trying to get the north section in because we know that there's going to be some deficiencies, as we found on the south side. I did solicit a bid from Perez Roofing, see if they can do any better than Sierra Builders in terms of cost. They did such a great job at 71. I thought it was a logical idea to have them take a shot at it. And that was all I have for you guys. Any questions, sirs?
Michael, have you heard anything on the Highlands, the mailboxes? You know, we set aside some money for them to use to get that fixed up.
I have not. We ran into, the requirements for a contractor on such a project. We run into the same problem everybody else does, which is getting contractors interested in a smallish project up here.
I understood he already had Mark Zulum.
He may have. I don't know. I've been very busy. I haven't followed up on him. On that, I've been had a lot of other stuff on my plate, but I'll be happy to talk to Carmona and see what's going on.
Okay, well, the time is running out on that money, so
I'll visit with him and see if we can push that forward a little bit. He's got to settle on his scope, so that we know where we're going.
Any other questions? Okay, thanks, Mike.
Thanks, sirs.
Okay, all right, representing Community Chest and the library, Eric Sean.
For the record, Eric Schoen, and I come to you mostly with a heart full of gratitude for your support, both commissioners and county manager, for helping to make our Friday night open house and grand opening possible. Without your support, both official support and your personal support to a person, we never would have gotten us across the finish line. And for those of you who couldn't make it, we had between 100 and 150 people. I saw lots of lively conversation. Lots of wine and cheese, extra strong root beer floats, and it was just a magical moment. So if you haven't had a chance to check out the center, we invite you to. We're still getting things dialed in. Our tech center is not quite up and running, but you're welcome to come and see the facility. So thank you mostly for just helping to make Friday night such a special night.
As you know, both of you, it was great wine and great coverage on Channel 2, I thought. So
yeah.
Win-win.
Yeah. Terrific. It's a beautiful facility, Eric. You guys have done a fantastic job.
Really?
You had me with the root beer float.
I didn't have
it. All right. Over at the fire department, Chief Nevin.
Morning. Thank you. For the record, Jeff Nevin, fire chief. First off, I want to thank Mike Northern for all his hard work with the projects that we've had with our facilities. He's done a great job and kept those contractors in line, so it's been nice to get that done. Thanks, Mike. We are wrapping up our fuels project for the grant that we've received on the summit there for the spring months. We'll transition into what is typically known as the fire season around here, which is not necessarily a fire season anymore. It's a fire year, as was evidenced by the fire they had in Lyon County over the weekend. So we'll be transitioning more into the traditional fire season role. And mentioning that fire that they had down there, about 3,000 acres pretty much overnight, which for this time of year is moving quick. From the video evidence that I saw on the news was the grasses and are very dry. There was not a green stitch of grass to be seen through there. So it's with the winds and the dryness, I just caution people to be extra vigilant. There were some initial reports that this was caused by shooting. I don't have actual facts of that. But again, people just need to be aware, be cognizant of the fact that the fuels are dry. And, you know, if you're going to be out there, have the precautions necessary, axe, shovel, water to try and extinguish the fire if you start one. So, any questions? Thank you.
Thanks, Chief. All right. Next over, over to the Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Hugh Gallagher, Story County Comptroller. Your next meeting, this is an alert. You will be asked to review and approve the augmentation process for the year ended 6/30/2018. The budget augmentation is a procedure for increasing appropriations of a fund with the express intent of employing previously unbudgeted resources to the fund for carrying out the increased appropriations. We have done this in the past. There are things that, and we pretty much like to, for example, emergency mitigation. We're going to have to give them some money because we spent some money out due to a crisis. We also had a development where a lot of our former staff went from the 474 operations over to community development. We have to make an augmentation for that on the budget side. There's basically four or five different areas. There's salaries, benefits, operations, general government, which includes capital outlay, interlocal agreements, and financing. And if any one of those are off in any one of our funds or any department within the general fund, we have to adjust, or we leave that and then we get one of those correction deals from our outside auditor at the end of the audit. So that's basically where we're going to do next week. I've never given these people a plug, but I saw this yesterday as I was talking to the director of the Fourth Wood School. And this Sunday at the Fourth Wood School Museum at 1 o'clock p.m., it's called Avant Grande Wannabe Cowboys Place Attachment Among Bohemians, Beatniks, and Hippies. This is a lady by the name of Ingrid Barnett, who is a researcher, author, educator, and musician. She received a doctor degree in geography from the University of Nevada. But her work is in the psychedelic, ethnic, and cultural scene of Virginia City in the 1960s. So she will be talking about all of the people, the characters that were here, and I know because I was here, in the 1960s, and in fact I lifted my basketball coach's driver's license so I could go into the Red Dog and listen to the likes of Janis Joplin. So for all of us who used to have hair or long hair and beads, it'll be a kind of a fun event. I'm not sure how I escaped it. I think the power of Sun Mountain prevented me from being down in Haight-Bashbury selling flowers to somebody. So that's my report.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. District Attorney Langer.
Well, it'll be hard to follow that. I have nothing today, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. County Manager Pat Whitten.
I'm crafting a request to D.A. Langer to see if the statute of limitations has run out from Hughes' 1960s. Let's see what happens.
Tony's here. Arrest him.
There you go. Just a couple of real quick things. By approval of the consent agenda earlier in this meeting, I want to make note that there will be no commission meeting on July 17th. Chairman McBride, Vice Chairman McGuffey, and myself are due to travel back from Tennessee that day after having attended the National Association of Counties annual conference. So no meeting then, which leaves us with a meeting schedule of June 19th. July 3rd, and that's been somewhat of a question, are you meeting on July 3rd because it's the day before July 4th? And my answer is yes, as verified with the chairman. Thank you. No meeting on July 17th, and then next meeting on August 7th, according to my calculations. So that's our schedule. And if everybody out there can kind of adjust your activities and your needs, that would be great. Yesterday, on almost literally a spontaneous basis, I was able to grab about an hour with Tesla's director, Kevin Kassiker, to sit down and say, we really need to get these negotiations finalized. You know, there are FTE requirements at stake, budget numbers at stake. So Kevin and I and their chief negotiator via conference call, Daniel Witt, we had a good conversation. We've got quite a ways to go. But we also committed yesterday to do this as expeditiously as possible. So I've made it very clear to them that while I can certainly conceptually agree to certain things, it obviously has to go, A, through legal counsel, and then, B, ultimately through the this board for any action on any items. So I will keep you posted as we make progress. I'm due for a conference call, I think, Thursday afternoon with their finance negotiator, Daniel, from either Fremont or Palo Alto, wherever he is that week. I want to piggyback on Chief Deputy Dosen's comments about Senator Gustafson. I ran into Sheriff Antonaro and Don in the Gigafactory yesterday while I was there. And it's great to see Don leaving. Is, I think, a big loss for the legislative process in Nevada. And I'll tell you a story just to kind of, set the stage. Before the special session, I think in September of 14, I believe, it could have been October, I got a call from actually one state senator on behalf of three state senators. That was Senator Settlemyer, our senator, saying, I'd like to come up and bring a couple of people with me because we've got this proposal out there, that's going to waive a lot of fees, maybe cause a lot of impact on Story County, and we'd like to know your read as the county manager. We met on a Saturday afternoon. Campaign laws precluded them from taking any, I couldn't buy lunch or anything, let's put it that way. And I was truly heartened by both Senator Settlemyer, Senator Gustafson, and also then Senator Sagaski, now State Treasurer, State Secretary of State, Sagaski. So great people, and we are losing a great public servant with Senator Gustafson opting not to rerun. And last, I got a great email today from Joe Starnes in our Community Development Department, and it says significant changes with our ongoing nuisances and zoning bumps. We've abated nuisances two in Virginia City, and then one zoning issue as well in Virginia City. So he continues to check those off. And I would tell you, I don't know that we've ever been as on top of nuisances as I think we are collaboratively, both with Community Development Office, but a huge player in this thing is the handoff then to the District Attorney's Office and the other offices potentially involved in there. It could be Austin for the zoning or Kathy, but there's a great workflow going on with this stuff, and I'm very glad that we're correcting the problems as opposed to hammering the problems, I think, whenever we can.
That's good. I know they had a laundry list up there to start with.
Yeah.
We still do, but When four get off and one gets on, that's progress.
Sorry. That's progress.
That's it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Pat?
No.
Okay. Pat, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
It's been brought to my attention that following the May 15th meeting here, a blogger had implied on a post the county may have awarded a no-bid contract to a local contractor to build the county's new justice center here. And then immediately following that, the county also received a public records request asking for those documents of the same no-bid contract. I don't recall us ever mentioning anything about any no-bid contracts to anybody about the judges, and maybe you could reiterate what was said. I know it was two meetings ago, but...
I'd be happy to. Let me gather my thoughts. We know the justice complex depending is going to run us in the ballpark range of about $1 million. You know, probably a little bit more. I can't recall the specific numbers. But most importantly for me is per square foot. To set the record abundantly straight and clear, there's no no-bid contract. If there was a no-bid contract, I think I'd be on the next agenda for losing my job with you guys, because that's patently in excess of any delegated authorities I may have. As I recall, I had a per square foot estimate, if you will, from a contractor, a Carson City-based contractor, Shaheen Beauchamp, and I know I slaughtered the name, and Anne always corrects me because it's French. But Shaheen Beauchamp that built a community center that Eric just referenced, also built Classy Seconds down in Carson City across from the Maverick Station, and many marquees. I think the Catholic Church in Carson City, I learned on Friday night talking to Mark. So they've got they had a per square foot that I believe I mentioned during the May meeting of around $120-some-odd just for the show. And it may or may not have been construed, but it is not true. If it was, then it would be an assumption that would be wrong. That I think I turned to Vice Chairman McGuffey and said, that's a pretty good price per square foot, is it not? I'm even thinking of having a garage built or something. And I think I got that same nod I'm getting right now. So, for the record, to make it abundantly clear, there is no bid contract. There's no contract. We haven't even gone out to bid yet. And I'm glad you asked me, because I can yet provide another update. We were targeted probably at that meeting, I think, to try to be done and through historic during the month of June. We were going to try to get on Bert's schedule for consideration by historic. I don't even know if historic's having a meeting in June. I heard that that may not happen.
It's been canceled because there were no items on the agenda.
And to be candid with you, even though our district court judges may have a little angst with this, I'll work with them on that. They've been very tolerant and patient, as hard as I was pushing our architect and his group, Pete DeBay, you gotta slow down and do it right sometimes. So my goal right now is to have everything in as far as exterior design, plot map, as far as lot layouts and stuff, in a level that we can get historic approval in the July historic meeting. And once we know we've at least got conceptual approval at that stage, then we'll go out to bid. So there are no bid contracts. There will be no bid contracts, and we definitely will go out to bid under standard guidelines, working with the DA's office.
Right. Thanks for clarifying that. Also, if time was of the essence and all the architectural stuff was ready to go before historic, they could always call a special meeting there, as we do here. One good thing about it being delayed now anyway would probably be the best, because Bert will be out of town. Someone else is going to go ahead and staff that meeting. And we don't really like to make big decisions on that board without Bert there, because he is an expert, you know, on the subject. So.
Yeah, and I might just weigh in on that one too, Mr. Chairman, since you're on that commission. His Bert has been very good and easy to work with, particularly once we moved our target area, if you will, from between the courthouse and Piper's, two of the most historic buildings in town, down to the jail site. You know, we're not going to put up a glass skyscraper. It's going to be pretty de minimis in terms of design and everything, probably tying into what the jail design is, if you will, and working from that. But Bert's been great to work with so far. I look forward to Pete DeBay, our architect, and I taking it before the commission, and I appreciate the opportunity if the judges want to accelerate that by anything, but I'm hoping they'll be okay.
Yeah, very good.
Thank you for the question.
Thanks, Pat. Okay, Next up on the list here is County Clerk, Vanessa. Nothing today? Okay. All right, that concludes the public comment on...
Janet.
I'm sorry, Janet. I was expecting you just to come up under the item that we have agendized for you tonight. So.
It's quite all right.
All right. Since we're blessed with the appearance of the county assessor, Janet Sutton, thank you.
Good morning. There's a lot of exciting things that have finally started happening in the assessor's office that I actually have good news to report. The biggest thing is after a year of designing our new software system for the, actually it's now 14 counties in Nevada for the assessor system, we have finally concluded the design phase of this project. It's over 4,000 pages of design documents, and like I said, a year in the works, and the second week in July, we will start doing our hands-on, at least the committee members, there's six of us, we'll be doing hands-on, working through it, and making sure there's no bugs, because up to this point, it's all paperwork. You know, it's not hands-on. So what we've designed, we will actually be able to see what we've designed, how it's going to work, and how it's going to flow, and then make changes from there. So that's huge news. Super excited. We are on schedule. Where Story County, like myself, is on the design committee, we will be one of the first counties to start seeing this implementation. It's going to start off in phases at first. And the reason why the design committee are the first teams that's going to get this is because since they're delivering them in phases, the people that don't know how this has been designed will be a little bit confused because they're not getting all the pieces and parts. But I'm super excited that Story County is going to be one of the first people. We should start seeing this actually dropping into our servers probably about next March, I think it is. Our go-live date for Story County, like go-live, everybody that would be treasurer, hopefully community development, and the treasurer's office, the payment side, will be, I believe, the end of June, the very first part of July of 2019. And that will be go-live. All bugs should be worked out, and we should just be ready to rock and roll. So that's huge news for us. The other thing is new construction this year is phenomenal. The weather definitely has not helped us get out there and do stuff, but as a matter of fact, I'm bolting out as soon as I get finished here. There is new wood popping up all over Story County, not just in the Tri-Center this year. It's everywhere. I could not believe when we started putting all these permits together of the houses that we needed to go and see. I mean, we probably have tripled or quadrupled just the new single-family residences since last year. It's phenomenal. One thing I want to expand on of what Pat said earlier with Joe Starnes, Gary Hames and his team over there at Community Development have been a huge help in getting us stuff closed out for the assessor's offices. We've had homes that have been sitting half-built for years with no explanation as to what's going on with them, which we have to visit every year because they're partially complete. As we know, not everyone is above board and gets permits to do things. The nuisance department has been phenomenal, and they get right on it. We have quite a few tiny houses that are popping up in areas that are not seen, like easily seen, like back in our 40 acres. They hop right on it. They're getting in touch with these people. They're taking care of the issues. That has been wonderful. So I do have tax management issues, not issues, but wonderful things to talk about that, but that's actually just agendized item for the next one, so I will hold off on talking about that till then.
All right, any questions for Janet? All right, thank you. I think that concludes the committee and staff reports. We'll move on now to item number six. These are board comments. We'll take no action or public comment. So at the far end of the table is Commissioner Gilman.
Nothing today, thank you, sir.
All right, thank you, Lance. Commissioner McGuffey.
As you know, a week before last, I attended ACO Western Interstate Regional Conference in Idaho. It was a great conference. A lot of topics are covered. The two primaries were, of course, the lands bill. That's brought up at every NACO convention. It's some people getting tired of hearing the lands bill because nothing has actually moved on it. It's kind of it's being pushed in Washington D.C., but it's just creeping along. So there was no real news on that. The new news, of course, is affordable housing, and that's been brought up here locally. And that actually was brought up right before at an ACO meeting before I went to the conference. Like I said, Julia Ratty, Senator Ratty, is proposing a bill at this next legislation pertaining to affordable housing. And I did ask the question, how is it going to be funded? Was there going to be impact fees like she tried to do to us before? That word hasn't been brought up at this time. But while I was up in Idaho at the Affordable Housing Conference, part of it, there was some good information, and again, it was same questions asked here, is like what defines affordable housing, and it's always been known as 30% of your income. Well, that's not always true. You might qualify in that matter, but that doesn't mean somebody's going to give you a loan. Okay, because now they're looking at all other fees that cost in them, that you have to spend to own that home. But an interesting term came about during this conference, and that was called flex fees. And they kept talking about flex fees. And finally, the question was asked, what is a flex fee? Well, after a lot of ho-hum, it's just another term for impact fees. So we're going to keep our eye open on that. So it was a good conference, though.
Great. Thanks, Jack. And thanks for taking the time to attend that. I'd love to go to the Western Regional Conference. I mean, time is always of the essence, so great. Once again, thanks, Jack. We don't have BCTC here today, so we'll bring up this last weekend special event in Virginia City at the Reno Tahoe Odyssey, the 178-mile foot race. It starts in Reno, goes up through and around Lake Tahoe, Carson City, up here through Virginia City, and then back down to Reno. They have, a couple thousand people that participate in this race, and so Virginia City was hectically busy on Saturday morning, only to be followed up Saturday afternoon with a bunch of motorcycles that came to town because this is the Roadshow's Spring Street Vibrations Rally. So that was a Friday and Saturday event here in Virginia City. So all of these little extra events, help out this community. I mean, we are a tourist base up here, and so whatever makes the cash registers ring for the local merchants is good for all of us because the county gets their sales tax portion out of it, too. So that's all I have.
Mr. Chairman, before you move on, may I add something to your portion that we usually cover? And I neglected to do this. Usually you so well summarize the passing of key county citizens, longtime county citizens. And I think we should again remember that Brad Bryant, Bradley Bryant from Ringgold Bend, recently passed, I think between these last two meetings. I remember Brad from when I ran for sheriff, was sheriff. He and I had a rather heated conversation, even though I think we had a mutual admiration society most of the time. He got some anti slammed the phone down, and a week later, we met back up, shook hands, hugged, and his hand was still shaking. He says, "I can't believe I did that." But Brad served at least 12 years. I can't recall if it was a little bit longer. He became our first example, our unfortunate example of term limits on the Canyon GID. Truly a great, great man. I think probably the icon of Rainbow Bend, in my opinion, in a great way. So I just wanted to make a note of his passing.
Thanks for that, Pat. Bradley was a nice guy. He was a real gentleman. He really was. All right. We're going to move on now to item number 7. This is a discussion of possible action. This is approval of Tax Management Associates Incorporated contract addendum and extension. County Assessor Janice Edden, the podium is yours.
Hi. Okay. So I'll give you a quick rundown on what tax management does for us. What they are doing for us is they are auditing our business personal property accounts. The reason why we call for an audit is, number one, we're appraisers in my office. We're not accountants. Okay, so the other thing is a lot of these businesses all over, especially with our dynamic with TRI, their headquarters are not here locally. So if we wanted to perform an audit like we're supposed to do per NRS, we would have to travel, like, to their corporate headquarters. Let's just say, I believe, like, it's Oklahoma for Walmart, and, you know, they're just, like, all over the place, really. So what we decided to do was go into contract. Tax Management Associates was working with Washoe County, and Washoe County had great success with compliance, getting the businesses to report correctly. We're not looking to point fingers. What it's all about is a lot of these companies, again, they have corporate offices outside of the state of Nevada. And you would think that if they have a business in the state of Nevada, that they would really know Nevada law. But a lot of them do not know all the nooks and crannies and the actual Nevada law of reporting business personal property. So basically what tax management does is go out, audit their books, tell them where they're out of compliance, and we get, if there is anything that has not been reported that should have been reported to us, they report current plus 3 previous years of unreported business personal property. Okay, so, I mean, and it can go the other way. If they have reported more property than what they have, then unfortunately they usually don't get a refund. We haven't really come across any of those yet, so we'll cross that bridge when we get there. However, the first year and a half did not come without issues. Tax management came into Nevada. Besides Washoe, we were the first ones. I don't think they realized what a need Nevada had for this and all the counties. So we jumped on the bandwagon first and got going, and then a couple of other counties jumped on, and they honestly, literally just got overwhelmed. And they didn't quite produce the paperwork flow like they should have, so we had some issues. So today's contract, we had it on the agenda before, but then after a meeting, Pat and I decided we were going to pull that and we were going to put some extra language into that contract, laying out timelines of when things had to be due, not only by tax management, but by Story County as well. There's also a penalty in there if tax management does not perform and give us the information when they're supposed to, then we don't pay for that one. Or I believe it's a 25% reduction, I think is what it is on that last, the last paragraph. So with that being said, you may ask, if we've had all these troubles, why are we going to continue with tax management? Well, I'm going to tell you, because we haven't finalized numbers, because we have until June 30th to finalize last year's audit and get everything billed. But I'm going to tell you where we stand right now, and this is just last year's, not what we've started this year. So, hold on, I can't see. All right. So in 2017, we audited 33 accounts, and the audit, the price of the audit is based on the size of the company, the dollar amount of their taxable value. So at the end of the day, what those audits will cost us for those 33 accounts, they will cost us $61,500 that we will owe Tax Management Associates. So, like I said, last year's audit, we were able to bill current, which was 2016-17. We were able to bill back for 15-16, 14-15, and 13-14. So, I have hard numbers of what we've already billed, and then I have some estimated numbers because we're still in the final audit. The taxpayer will have 30 days to appeal that final audit, and we've got some of those accounts that are still in that final appeal. We haven't heard from them, but we don't want to bill them until that last 30 days is over, so we're not doing corrections. Okay. To date, we have billed $97,665.74 in back taxes. That is to date. What will be billed, or we estimate to bill by June 30th, is another 400, Oh, I apologize. I just had LASIK surgery, so my eyes were not, they're not focusing very well. $433,654.59. That is an estimate. That also includes the 20% penalty that is dictated by NRS for unreported unreported personal property on the tax bills. So we have yet to have anybody come back and say, want to negotiate with us and say, can you remove the penalties at this point? So if that happens, that number could possibly drop. Or if we have someone that actually appeals their bill, that number could possibly drop. So basically what we're looking at the end of the day is what the estimated total to be billed by tax management would be, $531,320.33. So that's the reason why we're sticking with tax management and going to continue with this.
If there's a statutory requirement for the penalty, does that statute go ahead and give the county the ability to give relief on those penalties?
Yes, it does. It says may charge the 20% penalty.
Okay, I got you.
So we add it to the bill, and if they call and say, hey, I agree with this, is there any way you could help us with the penalties? 99.9% of the time we're going to say yes and we're going to waive those penalties. Generally, the only time that we'd say no is if they've been really pretty nasty and ugly and done a lot of other things and postponed and put it off and put it off and put it off. But we haven't gotten there yet, and I can honestly say that we haven't had to deal with anyone like that at this moment.
How long was the initial contract signed for?
The initial contract was supposed to be a 3-year contract, but we had some issues in the very beginning. We didn't even get started till almost a year in, because it kind of got lost in the shuffle on people's desks, not only here in Story County, but at tax management as well. So we really, even though the contract was signed, was supposed to expire the end of, it was a 3-year contract supposed to expire June 30th of 2018. We really only had those 2 years to really work with tax management. So another thing that has come up with working with tax management that I guess has been a positive thing that has brought to light some issues that we have with the state. This year, after sending out initial audit letters, we had 3 companies that basically fessed up and have been taking go-ahead abatements for quite a few years that they knew that they had been notified from the state that they were no longer eligible because they didn't meet the requirements. But we never received documentation from the business or the state. So these numbers, like I said, these are just last year's numbers. That's not anything that's going to come. We're looking to basically about the same dollar amount for this year's numbers for the businesses that we're doing this year. This year, I think we have like 29 that we're going to be doing auditing this year, because it's a random selection of all the businesses that we have that has over a $50,000 taxable value. Because it's just not worth auditing. It's not worth the cost of the audit to audit companies that have less than a $50,000 taxable value.
Does GoAhead have a responsibility to notify the county when these companies who received abatements are no longer qualified or has expired?
Well, personally, we feel like they do, but there's nothing in statute that says that they have to notify the county if these companies...
Can you contact their office and ask
them?
Oh,
we are. We have, and we've been, and actually we've been working with the DA on this.
Well, we'd like to make sure that we don't have to go through the audit process in order to know what they should be...
Exactly.
We've been working on this.
Yes.
Okay.
And it is an issue with the state. The state, the lady that's in the GoEd office now that's fairly new, she flat out said this department has now, they have made this department, it's a brand new department because there's been so many issues with the GoEd abatements. Unfortunately, the state has turnover like crazy. So by about the time you get someone that knows what they're doing, they leave and go to a different department, and the state doesn't hire someone to replace that person until after they're gone. So then they start this whole new process of, and then basically I feel like it's the counties trying to train these people to do their jobs at the state. But that doesn't help us when we don't know what's going on. We can't tell them. So because of what has happened, and with these audits with TMA, it has brought to light this issue that we have. And we are currently trying to get with the Department of Taxation, like, we're trying not to go over their head. We're trying to get with the new director, because now they have, I don't even know, Dion has, I never can pronounce her last name. She has retired. They have a new gentleman, which is William Anderson, and they also have a new director in the Department of Taxation. So we're trying to get in and work with them. The result that we got was, can you give me a little bit of time to actually figure out what you're talking about and learn about this process before we sit down and have a meeting? So I'm really hoping that in July that we can sit down with all these GOED departments in the Department of Taxation and in the actual State Department and lay out some guidelines as to what should be done, because I feel like if it's happening to us, it's happening in other counties that have it as well. And I'm sure this isn't the only time we're going to see this.
Okay.
I believe we're working on an ordinance, too. Are we going to try to do an ordinance so that these companies that we are working with from our side will actually sign saying that they get those, isn't that?
Actually, I think we've already worked on that particular letter to the companies that they have to sign, basically under penalty of perjury, that we didn't need to go as far as an ordinance. The other thing that we're doing is finding out the new person from the Department of Taxation that we would be dealing with exclusively. So the problem that Jana was talking about is that they were changing personnel so regularly that we didn't have a contact person. So as far as making the actual person responsible or business responsible by signing Toby Witten put together and was being looked over by our office, number one. Number two, getting together with the Department of Taxation with the person that would be in charge of our county so we can really streamline the process and make both groups accountable. The organization and the Department of Taxation in providing us the information so we can follow through. Is that about what you're...
That is exactly it. Yes. And because it's very apparent, as soon as they were getting audited, they fessed up and said, oh, by the way, we've been getting this GOED abatement that we're not qualified for. So the letters are going to the company saying that you are no longer eligible for this abatement.
Right.
We're just not being told. So that's why this statement that Toby has come up with is basically they will be signing that statement on their declarations, their business personal property declarations, saying that they are eligible and they know it.
Right.
So we're hoping that will help.
Well, I'm surprised that the county isn't notified. If the state is sending the company a notification that they no longer get it, why isn't the county even copied?
Well, this is why when it came to our attention at the district attorney's office, we had a meeting and we're fixing the problem. That's all you can do is once it comes to your attention is fix the problem. Up till that point when you don't know about it, you can't fix it. But I think that we're going to be able to dial it down and be able to handle this now and in the future.
You know, typically for obvious reasons, stay out of most of the assessor stuff, although some of the global stuff comes to me, but I would ask Jana, you know, on these, that now that we know that Company X isn't eligible and hasn't been eligible for perhaps the last 2 years, we can back bill, correct?
We can. Actually, there are there's a couple of different issues because we have our statutory if there's an error, but then you also have the clawback for the abatement. So some of these are still within their clawback time. So not only will they be getting audited and anything that they have not previously reported, they'll have, you know, that bill that they will be billed for undeclared personal property. They will also get hit with the clawback for taking that abatement when they were not eligible for it. That falls under a different ordinance.
Right.
So there's going to be two different things, possibly three on some of these that are going, depending on how long they have been receiving this abatement. We have one that we very possibly might miss 1 year of the clawback because it's been so long. But the others fall in right within that current plus three.
And if I can add, back to TMA, Tax Management Associates, universally, not the go-ahead taxation challenges that they've helped us discover, you know, in many respects. But back to TMA, you know, Jana's numbers, I think, spoke for themselves. If we're paying somebody $60,000 to help us discover
$531,000,
you know, that's one thing. But I had the need and the reason to review one ongoing audit, I think, last week or a week before last. And I mean, literally, the documentation to this one account, one of 29, one of 30, was that thick. So not only are we not accountants, but I don't know that we're equipped to do 29 of those like this. I was pretty impressed with the level of detail and the level of work that went in on the TMA side to, you know, to validate the numbers that we should be working with on this account. So,
and I'm not going to lie, it is a time-consuming project for Toby. Because, again, TMA, they're working with states, you know, jurisdictions all over the United States. So we do spot check. We go through and check to make sure that what the life schedule that they have put on these products is correct. We make sure that there's not real property improvements that are being audited in here. And it is, I hate to say it, it's a line-by-line check. And, you know, some of these companies, as you guys well know, these large companies out there and try, they've got 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 line items of information. So is it worth it? I think so, based on the numbers. I think it's worth the money. I think it's worth the money that we're paying tax management and the extra time that we're putting in. Because what happens is these companies that we've audited, now they have been told, they have learned, I guess I don't want to say schooled in the ways of Nevada law, but going forward, there shouldn't be any issues going forward. It really streamlines a lot of the issues that we've had with a lot of these companies in the past. So,
And I think, again, Jenna, correct me if I'm wrong, because it's probably been 45 days, I think, mm-hmm. since I've really worked with you and that conference call with
right.
the folks at Tax Management and others. But the good thing is, the challenge is as TRI continues to grow, there will be more companies
yes.
joining that list. But the good thing is, by extending this contract for 3 years with what we already have that Jim has referred and what we think we can accomplish in 5 years, we should have made a full cycle on all the 50,000 plus ones, or most all of the 50,000 plus ones, by the expiration of this contract. And as Jim has said, that really shortens the learning curve that, you know, you're not going to have a problem with company Y probably two cycles in a row. They now know we will audit, and we'll audit again. We're not saying we want it subject to your approval of an extension of the contract, but we'll mm-hmm. spot audit much less. We know who our problems are. We know companies that have equipment staged in both Washoe County and Story County that they don't seem to find a home. They must go into the thin air, you know, in the middle of the night and land back wherever they're needed.
We've had a couple of those that have disappeared on us as well.
Yeah.
The nice thing about this contract is there's not a certain number of businesses that we have to audit. So right now, we were trying to get in that 3 to 5 year, we were trying to get all the businesses that had been out there for a long time, try to get those done. After this initial audit of this first 5 years, then we may drop down and we may be only be auditing 5 or 6 accounts a year. So, and then of course our cost is going to go way down on that. We're only doing 5 or 6.
Right.
Okay. Any more questions for Jenna?
No.
All right. Now we open up for public comment. Come on up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have some documents for you.
Okay. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. I'll just read it. Hi. My name is Tanya Brown. I'm an advocate for the wrongfully convicted. I became an advocate because of what happened on May 9th, 1988, some 30 years ago, to an innocent man.
Wait a minute. I'm going to have to stop you for 1 second, okay?
Yeah.
We're on the subject now of the tax management.
Oh, I'm sorry. I heard public comment. I'm sorry.
Okay,
that's
sorry.
At the end.
I'm going to ask you to take a seat.
Thank you.
And we're not too far off, but we're going to be
okay.
up to the public comment section here real soon.
Great, thank you.
Okay.
I just got in.
That's all right. That's all right.
And the same will apply to you, Katie. Okay.
All right. Once again, I'll ask if there's any public comment regarding the approval of the Tax Management Associates contract. Any comment regarding this? Okay, hearing none, if I can get a motion to approve this.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve the Tax Management Associates Incorporated contract addendum and extension.
I'll second.
Been moved and second to approve this contract and addendum and extension. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. We're going to go ahead and recess as the Story County Board of Commissioners and convene as the 474 Fire Protection District Board. Next up on our agenda is item number 9. This is a discussion of possible action. Approve the renewal of the interstate interlocal contract between public agencies. The contract between the State of Nevada, acting by and through its Department of Health and Human Services, Division of Health Care Financing and Policy, and the Story County Fire Protection District. Chief Nevin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jeff Nevin. I brought this contract to you just over a year ago. It was the initial contract. This is a renewal for the next 5 years. Basically allows us to bill Medicaid actual costs versus their negotiated rate. Some of the numbers that we've looked at, nothing hard, but basically double what we are able to bill currently. So it's a win-win for the department.
Even though you bill for that, though, are we going to be able to collect anymore? Because isn't there already a negotiated rate on
that? Hopefully we can collect more.
Okay.
This has been a process through Nevada Fire Chiefs Association to get this going for longer than I've been here. So we're all of the districts in the area are finally seeing some fruition from this.
Okay. Questions for the chief?
No, I see this as just a renewal. We haven't had issues in the past.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding this contract? Hearing none, if I get a motion to approve.
Okay. I'll move to approve the renewal of the interstate interlocal contract between public agencies, the State of Nevada, Department of Health and Human Services, Division of Health Care Financing and Policy, and the Story County Fire Protection District, and authorize the fire chief to sign.
Second.
Moved and second to approve this contract. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 10, discussion of possible action. Approve a mutual aid agreement between the Story County Fire Protection District and the Regional Emergency Medical Services Authority, also known as REMSA. Chief Nevin.
Again, this is a contract was approved, or a, I'm sorry, not a contract, but basically an agreement about 7-8 years ago. Was approached by REMSA 2 months ago. They wanted to get everything back to current, so we sat and discussed it. I pushed this through the DA's office with Mr. Loomis and made some corrections to it, sent it back to them. They made those corrections and sent it back to us, and which is what you see in front of you. This allows us to respond into Washoe County, which REMSA has the exclusive services agreement to provide emergency medical services to the residents. This allows them to call us. We can go in, treat and transport those patients and then bill them directly, and vice versa allows us to call REMSA to come into our county, mostly on the north end when we get very busy down there. On occasion, we will call REMSA to have them come transport. So basically just cleans up the contracts from 2011, and we can move forward from there.
That's good. So you want to have coverage.
So is it Story County or REMSA that offers the $25 ambulance program?
Story County has an ambulance subscription program. It used to be $25. Now it's based upon your income, your household income. Oh. I'm not sure what REMSA's total cost is. That they might be $25 just because of their amount of subscribers that they have. They can make up that cost.
Is it Story County or REMSA that's operating in the county then?
Well,
as far as your ambulatory service?
Story County would be. This is only for mutual aid if we needed them to come and transport.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing's changing except for the fact that this will give them the legalese to come in.
And vice versa, correct, Jeff?
Right.
I mean, we frequently, in fact, almost always are the first responders on I-80, which is
yes.
all Ramsey jurisdiction.
Yes.
But we'll be first, and this is really what facilitates our first responders. That either Ramsey will take over or we'll transport based on the cooperation between the agencies.
Okay. Yeah, and they've had a lot of turnover in their ranks the last few years, so they've actually called us quite a bit to come into the city limits and help them out.
And Wadsworth and...
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Great. All right, is there any public comment regarding this agreement? Hearing none, I get a motion to approve.
I'll move to approve the mutual aid agreement between the Story County Fire Protection District and the Regional Emergency Medical Services Authority, also known as RIMSA, and authorize the chairman to sign the agreement.
I have a second. Moved and second to approve this agreement. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. We're going to go ahead and adjourn as the 474 Fire Protection District Board and reconvene as the Story County Board of County Commissioners. Next up on our agenda is item number 12. This is discussion on possible action. Approval of business license second readings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of Community Development, we are requesting approval of items A through L as they appear on your agenda and in your packet. All are conforming and ready for approval under second readings.
Okay. Thanks, Pat. Is there any public comment regarding the approval of these second readings? Hearing none, we get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the business license second readings of items A through L.
Second.
It's been moved and second to approve the business license second readings. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 13. This is public comment, so now this is your turn. Usually number 23 or number 33. Today is only 13. No problem.
Hi, my name is Tanya Brown. I'm an advocate for the wrongfully convicted. I became an advocate because of what happened on May 9, 1988, some 30 years ago, to an innocent man, my brother Nolan Klein. My brother spent 21 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. In 2009, Judge Brent Adams ordered Washoe County District Attorney Richard Gamet to turn over the entire file in Nolan Klein's case. When the file was turned over, the exculpatory evidence was discovered hiding in the DA's file. The evidence was withheld from the defense and the jury. As Mr. Klein's attorneys were getting ready to file their motions for new trial and bail that morning, I had just received word that Mr. Klein had just passed away while in prison. The file contained over 220 documents, and I have pages listed, including the prosecuting attorney, Mr. Ronald Rachel's handwritten notes on the motion for discovery. Mr. Rachel had defied a 1988 court order issued by Judge Peter Breen to turn over all of the evidence. Mr. Rachel had only submitted 20 exhibits during the trial, page 50, and the defense, 10 exhibits. All of the evidence that supported Mr. Klein's case of mistaken identity was withheld by Mr. Rachel, including the Sparks prime suspect, one Ricky Lizarski. The file contained the Sparks Police Department Detective Sherman Bach's theory that Mr. Zarski had committed the Payless Shoe Store crime and three other crimes. Those victims from those three other crimes had cleared Mr. Klein, all hidden from the defense and the jury. I've listed the pages that I'm providing you. As an advocate, I have worked on getting legislation created by working with members of the Nevada Assembly and Senate since 2007. I've attended the Nevada Legislature Committee hearings on the Advisory Commission on the Administration of Justice, a.k.a. the ACAJ. Over the years, studies have been presented by the Innocence Project to the ACAJ showing the commission that statistics on wrongful convictions, including those who have been misidentified through photo lineups, put together by law enforcement agencies and lineups and individuals. In the statistics presented to the ACAJ, 72% of those who have been exonerated by DNA testing were convicted based on eyewitness identification. These photo lineups or arrays are no longer being used by Nevada law enforcement agencies and other law enforcement agencies throughout the country. The photo lineup array I've provided to you and to the public for the public record was put together by Sparks Police Detective Sherman Box. As you can see, I can pass these out. Mr. Klein, number 3, was a total headshot, making him stand out and drawn to him. He is also the darkest picture. This picture is called Unconscious Transference. The victim of the Payless Shoe Store crime was told by Detective Box that they had picked up a suspect and they had to let him go, and then they proceeds to show the victim the photo lineup, and she quickly goes to number 3. Mr. Klein has now been positively identified. The same photo lineup has been shown to over 160 people who had no knowledge of what the suspect, Mr. Klein looked like, and picked number 3.
Can I interrupt you for a moment?
Yes.
Okay, under our public comment section, we generally limit it to 3 minutes.
Oh, okay. I'm almost...
But what I'd like to do is what you're bringing to our attention up there, does it have something that has to do with something in the Story County?
Yes.
Okay.
It does.
So...
I'm about to get to it.
Okay. About how much longer is it going to take you out? Because
about a minute.
Okay. I'm trying to let you have a little bit more time. I just want to know where you're
going. Yeah, I'm almost there, and you'll know the reason why.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. The same photo lineup has been shown to over 160 people, had no knowledge of what Mr. Zarsky or Mr. Klein looked like, and they picked a number 3. I don't know what photo lineups the Story County District Story County Sheriff's Office has used over the last several decades, but based on what I do know through the studies that have been conducted over the years and my personal knowledge of Mr. Klein's case, it is possible that the Story County Sheriff's Office has in the past put together a photo lineup, right, that may have led to wrongful misidentifications. Okay, the reason I am here is to ask you, the Story County Commissioners, to please ask the Story County District Attorney, Ann Linger, to support my March 28, 2018, recommendation for a petition for exoneration, Public Integrity Unit Commission, to look into wrongful convictions, removing the 2-year statute of limitations and compensation for the wrongfully convicted that they are now before the ACAJ. I have provided you with my recommendations that I have submitted to the Advisory Commission on the Administration of Justice on March 28, 2018. You may be wondering why I haven't come to the Story County, why I'm coming to you and not to the District Attorney Ann Linger. The answer is that I have made several attempts to discuss my recommendation with District Attorney Ann Linger to no avail. You may ask why Ms. Linger would not discuss these recommendations with me. Simple reason. District Attorney Ann Linger was also Mr. Klein's juror. It was Ann Linger who would tell me in 1990 what it was that convicted Nolan Klein. I've got pages listed. It should also be noted that even though the Deputy District Attorney Ron Rachel had withheld the exculpatory evidence favorable to the jury had been deadlocked for hours and would be sent home to return the next day in the morning. And I've also, there's a book called To Prove His Innocence. The nonfiction book To Prove His Innocence by Mary Elizabeth Morgan is available on Amazon.
You want to wrap it up now?
Yeah, I'm just about done.
Okay.
This is the pen name of criminal defense attorney Treva Hearn. The book goes into great details in this case. So what I'm asking for, because it does affect Story County District Attorney and the Sheriff's Department, and over the years I have had legislation created. The last one was the Advisory Commission accepted my recommendation to allow DNA testing to be conducted after conviction, and it passed and became law last year. Okay, so I want people who have been wrongfully convicted a chance to clear their names. There is a history between me and Ms. Linger. All the evidence that showed another man had committed the crime and eventually found 23 years later. Okay? So I'm asking that to sit, you ask, you know, because eventually if somebody is wrongfully convicted, it will come to the commissioners because there should be a suit, so you would be involved as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here's your copies.
Okay.
That kind of detailed it all. The only thing that I don't have, I tried doing it, is I tried copying the pages down from the book, but I could not do it because I was having trouble with the copy.
Okay.
But I can send it later if you'd like.
You have a copy for the trip? I gave all mine. Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you, Ms. Brown. Did I get the right name? Tanya Brown?
Tanya Brown.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Yes, those papers, are those still yours down there? Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for being here today. All right. We're going to continue on with public comment.
Good morning. My name's Catherine High, and I'm here to talk about the project to renovate the Church of St. Paul the Prospector, the Episcopal Church in Virginia City, and install the Western Missionary Museum. And I would warn you that I'm doing this off the cuff, so I'll be as brief as I can. So the church was built after the fire. I don't know how much any of you know about the church. It was built after the fire of Virginia City. It was completed in 1876. And it's had a checkered history. It's done very well over some time, mostly in the 19th century, and now it's fallen into disrepair. So the church is owned by the Western Missionary Museum. I've given some of you a copy of this booklet. I only have one left. I apologize. It's owned by the Western Missionary Museum, which was set up as a non-profit agency by the Episcopal Diocese of Nevada. The church is a contributing property to the Virginia City Historic District and is eligible for listing on the National Register itself, we believe. So we put together a really strong team to restore the church. Ray Pezzanella is a very highly regarded engineer in Reno. I myself am an experienced and credentialed grant writer and fundraising professional. We have Mercedes de la Garza, who was the architect for the St. Mary's Restoration Project and is working on the depot at Gold Hill. And we have several other people on the team from the University of Nevada. We're working with SHPO, we're working with Bert Bedeau. And I'm just here basically to tell you about the project right now. We do have some grant applications already submitted to Saving America's Treasures, particularly, and to the National Fund for Sacred Places. It's my opinion that these, and also of SHPO, that these are very strong applications because it's such an important project and because we have pulled together such a great team. Now, the project is probably going to cost in the region of $1.5 million to $2 to restore the church and to put in the museum. We're working with Joe Curtis and some other people here in town to make sure that the museum is a high-quality, historically accurate, and interesting museum, because we want to earn income from the museum to then make sure that the church never falls into disrepair again. Now, the grant applications that we've already submitted are very important applications. We haven't heard back yet and won't until the fall on the Saving America's Treasures grant. We've asked for $500,000. We have heard back on the preliminary phase of the National Fund for Sacred Places. And that is that they had 178 letters of intent. They've asked 32 projects to submit full applications, and we are one of those 32. So we're putting that together. That's due July 10th. The important thing now, and I'm just wrapping up with this, is that both of these major grants require funding matches. And so what we need to do now is to get out and start raising the matching funds for when we get these grants. So one of them is a one-for-one, and one of them is a two-for-one, which means that if they give us a dollar, we have to raise $2. The thing is, though, that the entire project sounds like a lot of money, but it's really not for this type of project. So we need to be out there, and we're working with the mining industry, the state, and hopefully TRI to help us raise these funds. So that's all I've got today. I just wanted you to be aware of the project, know what we're doing, know how strong a team and project this is and the likelihood of success, and let you know that one of the really important buildings for the Historic District is being attended to.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing it to our attention, because it's a very worthwhile project. I mean, that church, like the other two churches, are part of the Comstock history here, and it's very important that those buildings be stabilized. And,
well, the hope is, I would have one more comment. The three churches have got together and created a little group with the well-being of the buildings in mind. It's as much about the the actual fabric of the buildings is about the congregations.
Right.
So the hope is that when we're finished with St. Paul's, the group will be able to move on and work on the Presbyterian Church and the Catholic Church as well. Father Anton has already asked me if I'd be willing to help with that, and the answer is yes. So that's it. Right. Did anybody else have any other questions or comments?
You might try, you've heard of the Comstock Classic Car Club?
No.
Okay, well, it's going to have its sixth annual car show in July.
Really?
And all proceeds that we collect are divvied out to our local nonprofits to speak of. So in order to get on, to get in that line, you need to attend one of the meetings.
Okay.
And plead your case.
Okay.
And just kind of, and then we'll, it's not like we're going to give you thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. You know, we try to help everybody. So that's a source there. You might also try the Fraternal Order of Eagles. They donate to the locals up here as well.
Those are great suggestions.
If you want to get a hold of me after the meeting, I can give you some contact information.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
That's great. Yeah, we want it to be a public project. With a capital campaign like this, you tend to try and bring in the big money first and then go public to make up the last little bit. But I think that it's such an important, visible project that it really would behoove us to let everybody know what's going on.
Oh,
so
sure.
Thank you for that, those suggestions.
Great. Thanks for your presentation.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to continue on now with public comment. Hearing no more public comment, see you in 2 weeks.